When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Thought we'd be talking about a government shutdown. Thought we'd be talking about, you know, the people who are going to be harmed. Thought we were going to be talking about, you know, McCarthy's failures. Thought we'd be talking about all that. And it seemed pretty likely when we cut out on Friday. But somehow, miraculously, you have McCarthy who pulled it out. Pulled a rabbit out of an orifice, and we've kicked this can down the road another 45 days, which, you know, hey, I'm thrilled we didn't shut everything down. But hey, we got something to look forward to at Thanksgiving, because you got to assume the rifts haven't healed. Is there an opportunity? Perhaps. Perhaps there's going to be an opportunity for McCarthy and the Republicans to act like adults and our government to heal somehow, miraculously, and to start doing the will of we the people. Seems very hopeful on my part. Maybe this is an opportunity for them to realize, hey, we've been doing things wrong. We should probably start trying to do things a little bit better, a little bit. I'm hoping, hopeful, always the optimist here. But, you know, so don't have that to talk about. So what are we going to talk about? Let's talk about Trump. Not a good day for Donald. Got the death penalty. The corporate death penalty happened because when you hire lawyers that advertise at 3 o'clock in the morning on cable news and they screw things up, surprise. But Sunday, Trump was in Ottumwa, Iowa. For a campaign rally and spiel. And what's, you know, they talk about Joe Biden and his inability to speak and you know, the gaffes that he makes. I'm listening to Trump give his little spiel. And I'm not even sure where this comes from. Listen to this.
But if I'm sitting down and that boat's going down and I'm on top of a battery, and the water starts flooding in, I'm getting concerned. But then I look 10 yards to my left and there's a shark over there. So I have a choice of electrocution or shark. You know what I'm going to take? Electrocution. I will take electrocution every single time. Do we agree? I will take electrocution.
And my first thought was, well, go ahead. You know, knock yourself out. Do what you got to do. But what does this have to do with the campaign? Anything? And the truth, nothing. The truth is this is just him doing what he does, which is, you know, just kind of riffing on whatever pops into his mind. I'm not sure how him being electric. Well, wait a second. How would him being electrocuted help the? Oh, never mind. I'm not falling down this hole. But here's the thing. While during the same spiel, he regurgitated that line that he's been using. Every time I get indicted, I consider it a great honor because I'm being indicted for you. No. You're not. Don't blame us for your bad behavior. No. Don't blame anyone but yourself for your bad behavior. That, my friend, on you. Or at least that's what my mother always said. You know, when you get into trouble, it's you. It's your responsibility. You did it. You know, the old Beretta theme. If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. So here's the thing. Federal trial starts today. This is kind of like the penalty phase of a $250 million civil fraud suit. Also, could be the end of Trump doing business in New York. This is kind of a big freaking deal. Really kind of is. And so, you know, of course, Trump is going to lose his mind. He goes after the judge, says this judge should be disbarred. This is a judge who should be out of office. This is a judge that some people say could be charged criminally for what he's doing. He's interfering with an election. It's a disgrace. No, he's holding you accountable for your lies and your deceit. Now, understand, he's already admitted that he deflates, you know, the value of things. He's already admitted that he doesn't believe it can be inflated enough, because ultimately, and this is the part that just still blows my mind, that this was their defense, he can get any price he wants simply by going to the Saudis, and the Saudis will pay him whatever he wants. I don't know how that happens, but you know, if your house is worth $100,000 and a Saudi guy wants to give you, you know, $500,000 for it, would you take it? Of course you would. But what would you have to do? Now, today, the other big story, tell you how screwed up our news media is. Evidently, Trump called in a massive McDonald's order to be delivered to the trial. More hamburgers, yes. And this is one of those things where you go, one, I'm not quite sure. Does he have stock in the Golden Arches? What's the point? Well, the point is to get attention and to divert the attention away from his own failures. Look, he hired some lawyers who evidently, and this is mind-blowing, didn't do their job. Because I was wondering last week, going, how is it that this judge, you know, issued a bench decision? You know, nobody in their right mind, if you're in Trump world, would give one person who's unimpeachable and unable to be bribed, would give them to the decision-making process. You want a jury. You want a number of people so that you could maybe influence them, or, you know, maybe you get some of your red hats on there. So I was wondering, why isn't this a jury trial? Why is this a bench trial? Why does the judge get to do this? Well, we find out the lawyer screwed up. And so my mind goes, you know, he's going to upwards of $250 million he could be fined. He could, you know, not be able to do business in New York for, you know, a year, two, five, 10, whatever. Wow. So it could be very interesting to see where this plays out. The other big story of the day, obviously, Matt Gaetz is very unhappy with Kevin McCarthy. And this has kind of turned into a soap opera. To where now Gaetz has filed a motion to vacate the chair, to oust McCarthy. And you knew this was going to come in. In fact, he said he's going to do it a bunch. He's going to do it over and over and over again. He said that he took credit. He said, you know, he made McCarthy go to 15 votes to become speaker. So until I get to 14 or 15, I don't think I'm being any more dilatory. No, I just think you're being a giant. I can't say what I was thinking. Pain in the behind. Let's go with that. But here's the weird thing. This could be a moment where we actually start governing. There are some Republicans, not a lot, but there are some who are going, no, we don't want to crash the economy. No, we don't want, you know, horror and misery. We don't want what would come from a shutdown. Now, I look at where we are as a country. We have a news media culture that focuses on all the wrong stuff. The fact that I saw a story about Donald Trump ordering from McDonald's is shameful. The fact that if it bleeds, it leads, it's shameful. And this is on us as well. You know, they believe this is what we want. We want the negative stuff. We want to be beaten down. We don't want any good news. No, that might make us happy. So when I saw this, these series of stories that just grabbed my attention, you know, there's little enthusiasm for Biden or Trump. Mammoth has a poll out now. 37% of voters expressed at least some enthusiasm for Donald Trump. 32% for Joe Biden. Not at all enthusiastic. 52% for Trump, 53% for Biden. So we're already, you know, tapping down, you know, nobody really wants these guys. And, you know, NBC poll, 15% want a third party. Would they back a third party candidate? And then I see the mother of it. I see Bloomberg. Bloomberg tells me that the recession's still likely, you know. You know, with all the children in the house, the recession still could come because there are some cheerleaders who still want to push the recession frame. Got to have that, right? Then you see the stories that come down about what people believe. And this comes back down to what our media is shoveling in their face. You know, when asked, would you describe these days are excellent, good, or poor? The number of people who say excellent or good, 25%. Not so good or poor, 74%. When you ask people, you know, what incomes of the average American, if you're happy with that, 57% said no, 35% yes. Food prices, 87% say they're horrible, bad, not good. The whole point of the poll that they did was to put people into the two camps. It's either really good or it's really bad. And the really bad always seems to win because we've been trained to believe everything is bad. Every story we hear is bad. The economy is terrible. Unemployment is terrible. Unemployment is at historic lows. Wage growth is happening. Bankruptcies have actually gone down. Personal bankruptcies have actually gone down. I mean, there's a lot of good, but you don't hear any of this stuff. And the reason, there's a good reason. How many liberal business channels have you ever seen? Where you're going, how many workers are sitting on the business roundtable? How many have a seat there? How many times do you hear workers talking about anything positive? We've been thrown into this world where everything has to, if it bleeds, it leads. Everything has to be negative. And they keep us in this so that you go, well, it's all Joe Biden. It's Joe Biden's fault. Now, did I mention the fact that, you know, when things turn around and you get a Republican president, that messaging seems to change a lot? Have you figured this out yet? When the reality is, you know, I go back to Harry Truman who said, you know, if you want to live like a Republican, vote for a Democrat. Because it's their policies that allow average, everyday working people to do better. It's their policies that shore up a safety net so that people have an opportunity to put out a shingle and try. And yet, you know, every recession that I remember, you know, it's a Republican doing it. It's those austerity, starvation policies that hurt so much. And one of the lines I loved from Hillary Clinton when she was running, you know, it takes a Clinton to clean up after a Bush, which I thought was a fantastic line because Bill Clinton inherited a mess from George H.W. Bush. And when Hillary Clinton was running in 08, Obama got the mess, but she wanted the job. We seem to forget that. And right now, things are moving in the right direction. We're doing good things. We're reshoring manufacturing. Wages are going up. We're investing in the future of the country. But we've got a corporate-controlled media. Understand, virtually everything we see, hear, and read controlled by 6 major corporations. That's it. Do you think they have a vested interest in keeping, you know, regulations down, keeping, you know, higher taxes on rich people down? Do you think they have a vested interest in policies that come out of a government run by, well, working people? Of course they do. Which is why we never hear anything positive about working people. It's always, you know, those lazy union workers, which that frame is back now. And we've been hearing a ton of it. And as I said to someone the other day, I said, if you see a lazy union worker, it's because you have lazy management. You're using that person's labor wrong. Because look, I know a lot of lazy non-union workers. And they'll tell you because they're not being paid enough to work. But we're in this moment and we have to decide. So I'd suggest we start turning off some of the horrible corporate stuff. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I got to tell you, it's still quite remarkable that we're still being slammed with this stuff. It's all bad. It's all bad, Rick. Don't you know? Let's go to the phones. We got Steve on line one from Chicago. Steve, how are you?
I'm fine, and I wanted to raise a couple of points. So one, I believe that Donald Trump is just as afraid of the world finding out that he's not as wealthy as he likes to make out himself to be as he is of any sort of civil judgment against him. So, you know, God forbid that the world find out that Donald Trump isn't actually a billionaire, because that would hurt him more so than a lot of other things. You know, he ran on that sort of concept. You know, I'm this successful guy who built this multi-billion dollar fortune. Turns out that, you know, basically he got the equivalent of about $400 million from his family. And if he had just put that into the market and let people manage it and went out and played golf, he'd have more money than him having managed it himself. So he doesn't want people to find that out. You know, basically he undermined his own wealth through his mismanagement. So that's point number one. And two, I mean, you know, it was like having a crystal ball last week, because we discussed this, you know, that if the McCarthy had these two choices, deal with the crazies in his own party, and we're going to get a government shutdown, which doesn't benefit Republicans, or make a, you know, sane deal with adults in the Democratic Party. And again, there are a few adults in the Republican Party recognize that a shutdown, government shutdown, benefits nobody, least of which the people who initiate it. So he cut the deal. Now, he knew full well that what was probably going to happen. But that puts him in a sort of a strange situation, because there is no alternative to McCarthy. It's not as if, you know, Matt Gaetz is going to be Speaker of the House, or somebody in the crazy caucus is going to be Speaker of the House. And the Democrats don't have enough votes. So the question is, do the sane Republicans cut some kind of a deal with Democrats? Democrats say that they're not in the House to help the Republicans retain power or, you know, control the speakership. So what happens now? Could it be the case that enough Republicans, you know, move over so that perhaps we can get a Democratic speaker? I doubt that happens. But what could happen is that we just have a House without a speaker for a very long time, meaning nothing gets done.
Yep.
And to the extent that the wackos are just that, that's exactly what they want. They're fine with the nothing getting done and nothing else getting passed, because, you know, they love government that doesn't work.
No, they actually run on it, and those are the alternatives. And I've said that I think Democrats should stay out of it, stay out of the pie fight, and stop trying to save the Republican Party. This is their baby. Let them figure it out. And look, who would want the job? I mean, to be honest, you know, even if you could find a consensus candidate, who would want the kind of headaches that are coming, knowing that at any time one person can petition to vacate the chair? It would be an absolute nightmare, because McCarthy's original sin was allowing that little rule change to happen, which was stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you could eke out a victory, perhaps, but then you're in this position where, you know, you've got very little support to get anything done as a Republican speaker, because Democrats aren't going to support you. and then your party's still divided, and then we're going into an election cycle, which already means that nothing much gets done to begin with. So, you know, you'd pretty much be a footnote in history at best, and you could be a terrible footnote in many cases, depending upon, you know, what kind of agenda we have. You know, because in the event of any kind of a crisis in this country, you need somebody in that position that actually could get legislation passed. I mean, you know, the reason that things actually worked during COVID and the economic and social and political ramifications that entailed the COVID pandemic was because we had functional government, despite Donald Trump being the president. And we managed to get things done and passed. But, I mean, I don't know how you get through a crisis if you don't have a functional speaker. And so, I mean, that's the only thing that would bother me. But going forward, I'm not too concerned. Because the House, again, doesn't get much done in an election cycle.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this goes, because the name, Fitzpatrick's name here from Pennsylvania was thrown out by a couple of friends going, what about him? I'm going, at this, you know, he may have been willing at the beginning, but he would be an idiot to throw himself in the middle of this now.
Yeah, I mean, what advantage do you have? I mean, is it the case that perhaps you're hoping that down the road you are at the top of the list when you perhaps the Congress regains power again, and that you were Speaker at one point, and hopefully they can move you to the top of the list in terms of contenders. But other than that, yeah, you're right. I mean, who would want the job? You know, I'm not sure. I didn't understand why McCarthy wanted the job. I mean, he was going to be embattled from the very start, and this is exactly where we ended up. We've got a 45-day grace period, but as you pointed out, you know, that leads you almost into Thanksgiving. And the problem with this is a government shutdown just before Thanksgiving. I mean, there's a whole slew of problems there.
Yep.
And
then we kick the can down till Christmas.
Right, exactly. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that government needs to provide for taxpayers in order for the holidays to work right. I know people don't understand that, but that actually does have to work that way. Air traffic controllers need to show up. Technically, they're still supposed to show up in the event of a shutdown, but a lot of them opt not to. And we all know how terrible it is flying already, let alone post-COVID, let alone going into Thanksgiving and Christmas. So, yeah, the American people, if they're not already disgusted, trust me, you are going to be looking at an unhappy public if that's the case.
There you go. Steve, appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the thoughts. Let's go to Alice online, too. Alice, how are you today?
Insane. How's that?
Back to normal, I see. Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to agree with you about the media. And it's not just the news. It's the newspapers also. I have a subscription to the Washington Post. And instead of reading stuff that seems to be, you know, going on, I'm getting things like backroom battles between IRS agents, persecutors in Hunter Biden tax case, and then that Megan McArdle writing articles about society is best served when parents are married and children react better. And I'm thinking, oh my God, why don't you, you know, I want to see what's going on here. I don't want to see this stupid stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, bring me the news. Yeah, I know. I'm with you, Alice. Appreciate it, though. Thanks.
Bye.
Look, we've been talking about our beating up on the media for a very long time. But understand, they're giving us what they think we want. We want the divisive. We want the negative. We want the horrible. We want the juice. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. That's what we want. I had someone tell me one time that, you know, he takes great joy in hearing other people's miseries because this is so twisted. He said he likes hearing other people complain, especially about how horrible things are and how bad their life is, because it makes him feel better that sometimes their problems are worse than his, which is really very twisted and bizarre. But I think on a certain level, that's how we as a country view our media. That, you know, it's all horrible out there, and we need to take on the horrible, even if my life isn't bad. But the problem is, I think we've internalized that, you know, our lives are horrible because we didn't get absolutely everything we wanted. I don't know. It's weird and bizarre. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Anything you think, I'd love to hear it. Also, remember, grab the podcast wherever you find your favorite podcast. You'll find ours. We'll take a quick break right back after this. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I think my favorite screenshot of Fox News happened today, I saw. The thing, Trump gains, others fail post-second debate. They actually go through the different candidates and how much they lost. Like DeSantis, his approval went down 3%. Ramaswamy went down 2%. Nikki Haley went down 2%. Pence went down 1%. Trump didn't even show up, and he, well, crushed the competition. Shows you kind of how bad they are. It is what it is. But today, the big day, no government shutdown. McCarthy's being ousted, and Trump, you know, got the death penalty corporate-wise. So here to share some thoughts with us on, well, if this means anything, I've asked our good friends Chris Hahn to come talk with us. Chris is a syndicated radio host and host of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. You can find all that over at ChristopherHahn.com. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, man. How you doing?
Good. So kind of a big day, you think?
I mean, you know, Matt Gaetz is going to file his motion and they'll see it in 48 hours. I don't think he's going anywhere. Now, I have been saying this on my podcast and on the radio, on TV. Where are these problem solvers we've heard so much about? They seem to get like ink once in a while. They're on Jake Tapper and Smirconish. I would like the problem solvers to identify the key problem in this country, which is that the MAGA Republicans that control the House of Representatives are a chaos caucus. They don't even have a governing philosophy. There's nothing about them that makes any sense at all. I mean, you know, say what you want about, you know, the Freedom Caucus of like 6 years ago, but at least we knew what they wanted. I don't know what these guys want other than to destroy everything and burn everything down and to basically cover for Donald Trump. So these problem solvers need to, you know, there's 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats, I believe, in this caucus.
Yeah.
The 10 Republicans need to join hands, cross the aisle, and support the motion to vacate, and then support Hakeem Jeffries for speaker, and end the tyranny of the minority in this country, because the Republicans didn't win a majority of votes for the House. They may have won a majority of seats thanks to gerrymandering, but they're not a majority party, and they've gotten way too much, and they're basically destined to destroy the country. And I get it. A lot of these people will then be primaried and lose their seats. But what's the point of even having a Congress if we're not even going to be a Republic anymore?
No, and it's an excellent point. But, you know, like, who would want the job? Who would want the job knowing that one vote could do what Gaetz is doing? If you put Hakeem Jeffries in there, don't you think Gaetz would do that every other day?
Oh, no. If you put Hakeem Jeffries in there with 10, 10 Republicans joining to put it, Hakeem, you change the rule. That's the end of it.
Can you change the rule mid-legislative
most
body?
The House is a majoritarian organization. If you have enough votes, you could do whatever you want in the House of Representatives. You could change that rule. In fact, for Kevin McCarthy to be saved by Democrats, which, you know, everybody thinks that he's going to be saved by Democrats, there's going to have to be some changes to the rules. And some of the changes to the rules are going to have to require, you know, some guarantees of the things that Kevin McCarthy has been promising. And particularly, he's going to have to give the Democrats some power. You don't give away votes for free.
True.
Right. So, I mean, there is no path for Kevin McCarthy to remain as speaker without support from Democrats. And there is no support from Democrats without a significant change to the rules and without some significant power coming in their directions. I suspect that by the end of the week, we're going to have a much clearer picture of what happens here. Maybe by the end of Wednesday or Thursday, right? So I fully expect that Kevin McCarthy will have to make a deal, or the problem solvers will have to make a deal and solve the problem. And look, Kevin's a weak speaker. The man is a weak speaker. He's not to be trusted. He's already broken his promise that he made when he negotiated the debt ceiling. He's broken it. So why would anybody believe him? Now, I give him credit for not allowing the government to shut down. I give him credit for passing the debt ceiling. That was very difficult to do in the position he's in. But I don't, you know, give him a pass for breaking his rules. And again, I'm a partisan. I'm not giving you my vote for free. And I don't think that – I think Hakeem Jeffries and the leadership of the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives are very disciplined on this. You watched AOC yesterday, you know, who everybody thinks is this wild card person. She's not. She's actually a very skilled legislator who is kind of figured out this game pretty quickly. And she was very clear. I'm not supporting Kevin McCarthy for Speaker. And if he's going to get bailed out by us at all, what's in it for us?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that's the game.
No, because everyone's waiting for Democrats to do what Democrats do, and that is save the Republican Party. And I'm like, you know, they should stay out of this pie fight. Let the.
Oh, and by the way, if any of those problem solvers on the Democratic side cross the aisle and save Kevin McCarthy for nothing, yeah,
shame on
you know,
them.
Shame on them. And I could see that happening too. So although it's going to take more than 10, I think, right? So, you know, it looks like there's about 20 or so votes to oust McCarthy. So you need 20. Or so Dems to keep to save them. So I think that means you need a leadership deal. And I don't know what he's going to offer them. I debated Mick Mulvaney on this yesterday, you know, and Mick, pretty smart guy, right? A guy with, he's been around the block a few times. He doesn't think there's any math that makes Hakeem Jeffries speaker. I disagree. I think that there are some moderate Republicans who are annoyed with the way Kevin McCarthy has allowed, you know, 20 or so nitwits to kind of hijack the caucus.
Yeah, I'm chewing on that because, you know, the thought of Hakeem Jeffries getting Republican votes, I don't know. I don't know that I'm with you on that.
Well, you know, he concedes that they could be a Democrat, but it wouldn't be somebody from the leadership,
yeah.
Right? That they would have to have some sort of compromise person who's kind of like a no kind of like name, kind of just an interim speaker kind of thing. And that was his argument. He did not, Mick did not dismiss the idea of a potential Democrat. He dismissed the idea of a
leader. Happened before.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't see Jeffries though. I'm
trying. I think if Matt Gaetz successfully brings this motion to the floor and the Democrats aren't going to back him and he has the 5 votes he needs to he has enough votes to vacate the chair. You wind up with coalition government. No matter what you do.
Right.
So and there's only a 5 vote majority. And, you know, at any given time, one or two of them could be gone. So maybe you got a 3 vote majority and you got one of them's indicted on several charges. I don't know. I mean, I've seen crazier things happen in my life.
Like, you know, someone brought up earlier the fact that we could have no speaker.
No, you can't have no speaker.
Well, if you can't get someone with enough votes, if you can't get someone into that position, what are you going to do?
You can't operate the House without a speaker.
And then that's
so and that would be really bad. And I don't think that would last more than a couple of days. I mean, as we saw that at the beginning of the year, right? People start getting mad. Punches almost get thrown on the floor of the House of Representatives. But the Democrats are not going to resolve the Republicans' leadership fight for them. It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah. No, I was so, happy to see they didn't do it the first time. So they shouldn't get involved in it this time.
They're not going to do it this time either unless they get something sweet in return.
Yeah, like maybe not steal food out of the mouths of children. Maybe not, you know, gut Meals on Wheels funding. You know, maybe not do all of the horrible things that, you know, if you look at that legislation that they wanted to ram through, maybe not do that.
Right, right. Maybe not do that. Maybe end the fraud impeachment hearing that has no basis in fact.
Oh, see, you know, I wanted to continue that.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, the problem I see with it is that the media is obsessed with telling both sides of the story. And if we're talking about the criminal that is Trump with his 92 indictments and then his civil cases that are even worse in some respect, you know, we must say something bad about the Democrats, right? We must cover this impeachment hearing, which was a joke, which was a fraud. Even their own witnesses said it was a joke and a fraud.
Yeah.
You know, and then when they introduce evidence, they're introducing, you know, doctored evidence that, you know, again, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez kind of tore apart. You know, it's, you know, stranger things have happened. I want rules. I want changes to the rules and I want ending of things and I want chairs. I want chairs. If Kevin's going to stay in power, he's going to give us a chair.
Wow.
Something important.
There you go. We'll see. Well, look, I mean, I think he's the kind of guy who will do whatever he needs to do to keep his seat. Well,
he likes that office. I mean, it's got a very nice view of the mall. It's beautiful. You could see all the way to the Lincoln Memorial. I was there. I was in D.C. for a couple of days last week. It's inspiring. Yeah. So.
But if you listen to my conservative friends, it's on fire. Like every major city in the country. It's all bad, Chris.
It's not on fire. I saw a couple of people who might have had some mental illness while I was out there. They were fine. I mean, I tend to look like a cop, so, you know, they kind of stay away from me. But it was fine. I walked at night in D.C. Look, I have a thing when I go to a strange city. I got to find a good ice cream place, like a good local ice cream place. And there was one about a mile from my hotel, staying right by the Capitol. And I walked to this place at night after dinner, like around 7:30. It was dark. Walked up there, got myself a gelato, walked past the World Kitchen, which was, you know, the food bank of D.C. There were people there. It bothered me. You know, I get it. Look, man. People have to understand there, but for the grace of God go I. I grew up pretty poor, very poor, frankly. I went to college on the educational opportunity program here in New York. Food stamps. My mother was 16 when I was born. It you know, not pretty. You know, we can all be there, right? We're all like one catastrophe away from that. So, you know, my first instinct is, what can we do to help? How can we make these people have a better life? And I think that if we thought more of that in this country and stop looking at people as, oh my God, that'll never happen to me, and start thinking about what can happen to you,
yeah,
I think we'd be better off.
No, you're spot on. It's the reason that I'm a Democrat. The reason I support their policies.
Me too.
I believe, much like you, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. My mother was 16 as well. We were on and off food stamps, you know, and it was the most humiliating, embarrassing moments of my life that I still remember and I internalize. And I want no one to have to suffer those indignities just to put food on the table. So, you know, we share that, I think, is
nothing like wearing your cousin's clothes to the first day of school and your cousin was a lot thinner than you. You know, I mean, I'm pretty fit now, but when I was a kid, oh, not when I was a little, when I got to high school, I did okay because sports fixed me, but no, when I was an elementary school kid, man, I looked goofy.
Where are we going
with this conversation, Rick? What is this here? The Howard Stern show? You're going to bring out my tall tales, my tales of woe?
So. No, look, I think it's important that people hear that these stories get out there. It's one thing to see you, on TV and, you know, doing your thing, but to realize that, you know, you weren't born with a golden spoon. You didn't have all of the advantages opportunity. People gave you a helping hand, like you said, and there was the opportunity scholarship that gave you the ability to go on to school.
I don't
hear you going, hey, you know what, I got it, screw the people behind me, I need a tax cut.
No, you know, and not only that, I'll go one step further. Even though I'm not a religious person right now, I mean, I'm not anything but it. I grew up in the church and I read the teachings of Christ. And, you know, it's funny, all these religious right people who, you know, are laughing at the jokes that Donald Trump's telling over the weekend about Paul Pelosi being beaten in his own home. You know, Matthew 25 is a driving principle in my life. That which you do unto the least of them, you do unto the Christ. Right. I don't understand how this party, this Republican Party, which I used to think had some sort of moral compass, allows that man to go and, you know, throw F-bombs. He's running for president of the United States. What about the children? You remember how we used to always have to worry about the children? Remember how the Republican Party was trying? Look, I'm a Howard Stern fan. You know this. You remember how they were trying to drive him out of radio?
Yeah.
Because what if a kid was in the backseat of the car listening to his parents' radio? What about the kids watching a former president give a speech who's dropping an F-bomb and joking about a man who was almost beaten to death in his own home, who is still recovering? The cruelty of that party is just beyond me. And then for them to say they are Christians, it blows my mind. The hypocrisy of it drives me insane.
Well, here's the thing, Chris. The cruelty is the point.
That is. I mean, that's it.
That's the reality of it. These people are cruel.
Yeah.
And that's really the point in all this, to make other people suffering their entertainment. And look, I'm sure you've seen a lot of his speeches where he just rattles on. I mean, I listen to the right beat up on Biden for him not being the greatest orator in the world. But I've been listening to Trump. He sounds like, I don't know what's going on up there. Maybe all of these trials are getting him. I mean,
or
today
maybe he's
there was
old
a
too?
Big...
Maybe he's an old man too. Maybe. I mean, he's 79. I'm sorry. He's not only old, but part of his blood is KFC gravy, right? He's 50% gravy. He's 50% gravy. He's incredibly overweight, although I do think he's on Ozempic right now. He looks like he's thinning out a little bit. But he's overweight. He's got that, you know, I don't know, what is it, cotton candy hair that he does. You know, and you're telling me he's the guy? He says he's running against Obama and that he beat Obama in 2016. I don't know. He doesn't even know where he is half the time. I've seen him walk downstairs. It's not pretty. We all have.
Do they have a short stare? Can you believe that last week the big story was Biden wears tennis shoes and then they're worried about him falling while he's walking the picket line?
He's 80 years old. Okay. Look, Biden is an old man and it is okay if he takes steps to protect himself from falling because he's an old man.
I take steps to protect myself from falling.
Me too. Okay, I absolutely do. But that's just because you're old and you got to protect yourself from falling. Doesn't mean you're incompetent to talk and learn and do things. He's gotten a lot done. The guy knows what's going on in this world because he's been here as long as anybody in this business. I don't know. The guy's pretty freaking accomplished. And just because he's old, I mean, that's the issue. And then you're going to say, oh, no, let's go with this spry 78-year-old. Give me a break. I mean, here's what I think we should do, okay? We should make it safe for them so neither one of them fall. But we should just have them run laps around the track, both of them together, same time, and see who drops first. And whoever keeps going, my money's on Biden.
Yeah, my money's on Biden.
Whoever drops, whoever can last the longest, is president, all right? Forget the election. Forget spending the money. Let's just have them run laps, and we'll see what happens.
I got to get your thoughts on, lastly, before I let you go, I got to get your thoughts on the big trial today. I guess this is the penalty phase, right? I mean, I guess they screwed up and it was a bench trial where it's been ruled that the corporate death penalty is possible. What's going on here?
I mean, I don't think he's going to get the corporate death penalty, but he's going to lose something, right? Somebody posted on Twitter or one of the other sites today, let's seize Trump Tower and make it a home for migrants, right, who are coming up here. Right, for seeking asylum. I mean, that'd be great, right?
And leave the Trump name on it.
Yeah, I mean it. No, they'd form a condo board and they'd vote it off like every other condo in New York City. But it's look, I think he made a mistake, but it was going to be bad either way. And now he's in the penalty phase of this. It was a summary judgment that he committed fraud, which is just beyond me. He's screwed in a lot of ways, and he's gonna lose a lot. He's gonna lose a lot of his New York properties. He's not gonna be able to do business in New York, I don't think, anymore. Whether that impacts him broadly across the country, I don't know. I don't think he'll lose Mar-a-Lago. I don't think he'll lose Doral, but he's gonna lose a lot of these properties here in New York, which is a big part of his empire, 40% or so, 50% or so of his empire. So great job, Eric and Don Jr. while running the show, and him himself. I mean, you know, he lied about the assets. I mean, how do you take an 11,000 square foot apartment and say 30,000 square feet? That's a pretty big lie.
It was a typing error. But here's the thing. The defense I loved, that he can't overinflate the price of anything because, you know, tell me if I'm wrong here because it seems weird to me, that he can't make the price high enough because he's always be able to find a Saudi to buy it
or a drug lord. There was evidence it looked like a drug lord, like who formed the S Corp called Snowball Corporation. I mean, come on. I mean, the guy was really proud. He was a proud drug lord. I mean, you could always find somebody who's trying to launder money is what he was basically saying. And that's sick. It's real sick.
There you go.
And that's defense. And I hope he loses everything, but you know, again, 40% of Americans do not understand that this man is evil. And then there's another 10% that are at least willing to give him a chance. And that time to campaign. I was happy that Biden went on the offensive last week, called him what he was, a tyrant. I'm glad that General Milley said what he did. I'm glad to see General Kelly today finally break his silence on this and say, yeah, everything that they wrote about what he said was true. I was there. You know, good. You know what? Start campaigning. But what bothers me is it doesn't matter. Guy's been in the military his whole life. We support the military, but that guy's deep state, even though Trump made him his Homeland Security secretary and his chief of staff. We can't trust that guy now because he's deep state. Somebody's gotten to him. He took the shot, and now Bill Gates controls him.
Crazy, crazy microchip. Times. But Chris, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff, my friend.
Me too.
Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
Our good friend Chris Hahn. Make sure you check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. Also, the Aggressive Progressive Podcast. You get to wherever you get your favorite podcast. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1935. That was the year that San Diego hosted the California Pacific International Exposition, where President Franklin Delano Roosevelt spoke the most memorable words about the rights of workers to organize. The goal of the exposition was to showcase San Diego and to boost the local economy, which had fallen on hard times during the Great Depression. The exposition was held in Balboa Park. Exhibits included history, science, industry, and culture. To prepare for the expo, improvements were made to the park paid for by the Works Progress Administration. The WPA was a New Deal-era program designed to put people back to work on public infrastructure projects. The expo kicked off in May and ran for 377 days with a break during the winter months. More than 7 million people visited the park for the expo. Two of those visitors was President Roosevelt and his wife Eleanor. As part of his trip, the president gave a speech to 60,000 people at Balboa Stadium. Earlier that year, the president had signed the Wagner Act, otherwise known as the National Labor Relations Act, which guaranteed private sector workers the right to join and form a union. The president spent part of his expo speech celebrating that achievement. He declared, quote, "A changing civilization has raised new problems with respect to the relationship between the employer and the employed. It is now beyond partisan controversy that it is a fundamental individual right of a worker to associate himself with other workers and to bargain collectively with his employer." President Roosevelt went on to acknowledge, quote, "New laws in themselves do not bring a millennium. The passage of the law helped to launch a new wave of union organizing across U.S. industry."
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, as Chris pointed out, General Kelly came out. Now, understand, General Kelly's not just anyone. He was Trump's longest-serving chief of staff. So he was in on all this. He was there for everything. He was basically Trump's right hand during his time there. And, you know, for him to come out and say, look, you know, what can I say? What can I add that has not already been said? Trump, a person that thinks those who defend their country in uniform or are shot down or seriously wounded in combat or spent years being tortured as POWs are all suckers because there's nothing in it for them. A person that did not want to be seen in the presence of military amputees because it doesn't look good for me. A person who demonstrates open contempt for a Gold Star family, for all Gold Star families on TV during the 2016 campaign, and rants that our most precious heroes who gave their lives in America's defense are losers, and he wouldn't visit their graves in France. He went on to say a person who is not truthful regarding his position on protection of unborn life, on women, on minorities, on evangelical Christians, on Jews, on working men and women, a person who has no idea what America stands for and has no idea what America is about, a person who cavalierly suggests that a selfless warrior who has served his country for 40 years in peacetime and war should lose his life for treason in expectation that someone will take action. A person who admires autocrats and murderous dictators. A person that has nothing but contempt for our democratic institutions, our Constitution, the rule of law. There is nothing more that can be said. God help us. That is the statement of John Kelly, who was his longest serving chief of staff. And remember, Trump only hired the very best people. So in this, when this guy comes forth and says, I saw it all, I was there, and I'm telling you, this guy is horrible, this guy is not someone who should be in office, maybe, I don't know, maybe we should listen. Just kind of throwing that out there. Maybe you should listen to what the general has to say. Like him, like his politics, like him or not, it's all true. All the stories we've been hearing for years, it's all there. So you can't blame ignorance. We all know. Quick break, right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So last weekend, we talked about the fact that we went to Toledo, up to Centerline, Michigan, then over to Wayne, Michigan to hit the picket lines. And we're going to be back here at the end of October visiting Toledo, one of our attempts to do more with the folks who are on strike. I'm hoping they'll be done by then, hoping a contract will be reached, hoping they'll be back to work. But in the event that they're not, we're going to head out to Toledo for an event with our affiliate out there to promote the fact that workers are on strike fighting for better wages, hours, conditions for their future. Also going to do an event with the Dropkick Murphys. We'll have Ken Casey on the program to talk about this strike and all the things going on. So that's something to look forward to. Now, there's, you know, when we were there, when we were in Toledo, there was a huge Jeep procession. There were like 70 Jeeps that were just circling the plant. And you know, I have my Jeep Wrangler, and for a little bit we joined in, and I love the fact that people are taking not just to the picket line but taking to the streets to show the pride in their work. And one of those folks who is doing the solidarity rides, her name is Jessie Kelly. She's a UAW local 160 worker. She's also the chair of communications, has a podcast, Unity Gains podcast, which I highly suggest to take a look at. Jesse, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having us on.
So tell me about these solidarity rides. How'd you get this started?
So the idea behind the solidarity rides really came from the fact that when you're out on a picket line and there's like so much time that passes, I was out on a picket line for 40 days, 4 years ago. It starts to become a little mundane, and you know, you try to keep the solidarity live as much as possible, but the cars driving by and the community support and the honks really get you through hour from hour and hour on the picket line. And so when we started the stand-up strike and we found out that the first two plants were going to be the Jeep plant and the Bronco plant for Chrysler and for Ford, we said, how adorable is this, that they're competitors, but we're going out together and we're going out in solidarity and we're fighting for the same thing. Although we are different units and different companies, we're all UAW. So the idea came from, what if we send a bunch of Jeeps out to the Bronco plant to say, we're with you. And what if we send a bunch of Broncos out to the Jeep plant, and just by driving by, they get a little signal to say, hey, we're with you and we're in this together. And this is a class struggle and we're going to win this as one unit, as the UAW, not as Ford and not as Stellantis, but as UAW. And I think it's really lifted a bunch of spirits.
No, and it's amazing messaging, because it's that you're showing this solidarity. I don't care what you do. We're all important, and this all should matter to everyone. Even if you don't work for a UAW company, even if you work just in town, the fact that these jobs are good paying jobs, the fact that they're stable in the community and that they're providing, you know, a stable basis for an economy is really important. So the messaging out of this is huge, I think, too.
I completely agree. And for me, I always say it's all about opportunity, and it's about opportunity not only for our generation, but every generation after us. And that's what we're fighting for. And so to see that solidarity really play out is just absolutely gorgeous.
Because, you know, I think about the old Jay Gould quote, or it's attributed to Jay Gould, "I can pay half the working class to murder the other half." This could be a dividing line. You know, you work for Ford, they work for GM, they work for Stellantis or whatever. This is kind of a message to the boss going, hey, we're not going to be divided on these lines. We are right. we're going to stand together regardless of where you're at. That is, to me, just incredible messaging.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So what kind of response did you get from the people in either place? Because, you know, when we took our Jeep, because I have a Jeep Wrangler, I looked at the Bronco, ended up with the Jeep. Because, well, quite frankly, it's just because the Jeep had a stick shift, and I prefer manual. But, you know, when we went to both places, I got compliments from both lines. So, again, I think your messaging helped me out a little bit.
Yeah, and it is absolutely incredible. I remember I was at the Jeep line their second day of strike, and I was talking about how obsessed I am with the Broncos. And even then, you know, they're like, yep, as long as it's UAW built, as long as it's built by our brothers and sisters, that's all that matters. And I think that's, you know, it's just amazing, because for so many decades, we watch these corporations whipsaw us against each other and make us believe that we're competitors with each other when we're not. And so it's just been amazing. It's just so great. So last weekend I was on the Jeep line, and I was out there. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I was trying to help hold down the line for the midnight shift. You know, it gets a little sparse out there at midnight shift when it starts getting cold and stuff. And I remember, like, I had been out there for about 10 hours at that point, and I'm by a burn barrel. I'm talking to some brothers and sisters, and all of a sudden 10 Jeeps pull up and they go, hey, we're going on a convoy, and we're going to go visit our brothers and sisters at the fleet location, which is about 15 minutes away from the Jeep plant, who are also out on strike. And, you know, you just jump in the Jeep, you go down the street, you drive for about 15 minutes, you go see the other people that are out on strike, you lift their spirits, you get them some grilled cheeses, some water, and then you get back in there and go back to your picket line. And it really does just motivate you to keep going and keep going and keep going. And on Friday, we did one at the Solidarity House. And the idea was that we knew all of the negotiations were now happening at the Solidarity House. So we wanted to show the companies that we buy the products that we make when you pay us enough money to buy the products that we make.
Isn't that the famous Ford line? Isn't that the famous story we hear about, you know, about Henry Ford paying his people enough that they could buy the stuff that they make?
Right. And we wanted to show them that, like, we are loyal to these corporations. And yes, we're striking you right now because we want the kind of lifestyle that allows us to buy the products that we make. And that's not true for everybody. That is true for some of the people that are at the plants, the people that were hired before 2007 that still get a pension and health insurance and are top tier or legacy workers. But that's not true for our temporary workers and our two tier workers and all the people that we're fighting for right now. So we wanted to remind them while you're in negotiations, we're also your customer base. We're your workers and we're your employees, but we're your customer base too. And we're loyal to you. So we expect the same reciprocated loyalty back.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jesse Kelly. She's a UAW Local 160 worker, also a host of the podcast Unity Gains. Wherever you get your favorite podcasts, I'm sure you'll find Unity Gains. Make sure you check that out. Now you talk about the negotiations going on. Are we hearing things that things are moving? Where are we right now?
Yeah, so we're hearing things are moving. I'm a GM employee, so I just heard from the news today that the UAW offered another proposal to General Motors. General Motors came out in a statement, said there's still significant gaps. So they're moving, but they seem to be moving slowly. I love the messaging that is coming from our new international president, Sean Fain, because he's absolutely correct. These companies put themselves on strike. We were very upfront. We were very open and very transparent with what we were expecting out of this round of negotiations from the very beginning, 6 weeks prior to the deadline. And they stalled out and they stalled out and they were unwilling to waver or talk or put any effort or energy into it. And then all of a sudden a strike is called and they want to act shocked. And they're like, I can't believe that this is happening. And it's like, you had every opportunity prior to this to stop the strike. So it is important to know that, you know, they put us out on strike. We didn't put us out on strike. They forced our hand. Yeah. Nobody wants to be out on a strike, but that's where we're at. And we're going to do what we have to do until we get what we finally deserve.
Now, as a lot of the people that we spoke to on the picket lines talked about, this strike really is about the fact that the companies haven't honored their word from, correct, you know, the concessions that were given, you know, back in 2008, that, you know, 7 and 8, that, you know, they just want what they were expecting, what they were promised, what they were told. And that, you know, a 40% raise, while it sounds eye popping, is really not that big once you consider it's over multiple years and the fact that you gave up so much from the start. I don't know that that's been, especially in our corporate controlled mainstream media, I don't know that that's been fleshed out enough.
I completely agree. And one of the biggest things to remember too is we did take so many concessions in 2007 and 2008 to save those corporations, under the understanding that when things got good again, when it was time to reap in the benefits of all of those sacrifices, that we would be invited to the table. And we weren't, we were shunned. And we have not gotten anything back for all of those sacrifices that we created. If anything, it's only gotten worse. So we've taken more concessions in that time. In the last 4 years, even after a 40-day strike as a GM employee in 2019, we only achieved 6% gross wage increases over those 4 years. And so that means with inflation, we took roughly like a 12, 13% cut to our standard of living. I'm doing worse today than I was in 2019. And that shouldn't be the trajectory that we're on when we're working for corporations that are making multi-billion dollars and, you know, record-breaking profits every single year.
What's interesting to me is I hear this, and I've gotten this from a lot of listeners who have said, well, you know, these companies are doing well. Now, what happens, you know, if they do poorly? They're going to give away the store and they can't help themselves. And I said, you know what they'll do if they start doing poorly? They'll do what they've done in the past. They'll come back to the workers and ask for concessions. So when times are good, demand what you earn, what your labor creates, you should get a part of. Because, you know, if things start to turn south, they're coming back with their hat in hand, begging for concessions. You know that's going to happen.
Absolutely. And we want to work for profitable companies. We just want our fair share of that. That's all it is.
No, I say this all the time. Look, every company I've ever worked for, I want them to be as profitable as they can off of my labor. For the sole reason of that, you know, come negotiation time, I can come back and ask for better wages, hours, conditions. That seems to be the virtuous cycle. You do better, I do better. We both do better. And we do better when we both do better.
I mean, that's exactly right. And right now, all that we're seeing, though, is record-breaking profits, and they're doing fantastic while we keep doing worse and worse and worse. And this gap and this divide is just growing so astronomically that we're in a situation where there's not going to be a middle class left unless we fight for it right now. And so we have to. And when we say, like, this is our defining moment, it is our defining moment, and not just for the UAW, for the whole entire middle class.
Well, I mean, you're on the front lines also of the tech war. I don't think that's been covered enough either. You know, you're going, look, we want the next generation of jobs that are coming. And we're at another one of those transition points in our history. You know, I'm sure the people who made, you know, buggies, horse and buggies, built the best horse and buggies. But when the car came along, they were all out of work and they got screwed. And as I've said a number of times on this show, every technological gain that has happened, the wealthy get wealthier and the working class gets poorer and abused. This can be a time where that doesn't happen. And it's because of the labor unions that maybe it won't. I look at the Writers Guild. I look at the Screen Actors. I look at what you guys are doing. This transition can happen, but it's got to happen in a way where workers don't take it on the chin.
I mean, that's right. We need a just transition. We need, as a society, to make sure that everybody benefits from technology and from advancements that we make as a society as a whole. And like you said, we've been so disproportionate in that. And the wealthy has been the only ones that have been able to take advantage of all of these technological growths. And that's super unfortunate and it's not fair. And if we keep going down that path, again, that gap will just keep getting wider and wider. So we have to make sure that we fight for these things. We have to make sure we have a just transition. And it's not just technology. It's the transition into EV for us. And then that is coupled with technology, too. I know that I work for, like, you know, the tech center. So we do a lot of the pre-prototype vehicles, which means that a lot of the vehicles that I build are going into crash testing. Well, now you can have virtualized crash testing, or now you can make a pre-prototype vehicle while you're wearing goggles and doing it with AI, and you're doing it virtually and simulators and stuff. So we have to make sure that we are equally benefiting from all of these advancements. And that's why something like the 32-hour work week should not be scary to people, and it should be embraced by everybody, because that is, as a society, how we make sure that we get a piece of that pie. We want to make sure that everybody's gainfully employed, and we don't want to see jobs getting lost because we as a society are doing the right thing by going green.
No, you're spot on. I mean, in the 1880s, 1870s, 1880s, it was 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what you will. Technology has given us the opportunity to possibly get down to a 6 hour workday, get us down to some place where, you know, maybe we have more family life, maybe more leisure, maybe more, I don't know, anything but work.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, even if that means that you're contributing in a way to society that makes you feel more fulfilled, I mean, that's a beautiful thing for everybody.
So last line of question that I've got for you, because, you know, ultimately, this comes down to, you know, how long can the members hold out? You know, always the frame, one day longer, one day stronger. How are people holding up? I mean, we're, what, you know, 13, 14 days into this? The first paychecks are going to be starting to get missed. People are going to start, you know, the wallets are going to start getting tight. How are people holding up?
People are holding up okay. I mean, strikes are hard on everybody, but solidarity always prevails. At the end of the day, we will make sure that our brothers and sisters have everything that they need to make it as long as they need to. So the community support, the support from the other UAW brothers and sisters is amazing. And I go and I donate every single time I walk a line. I know my brothers and sisters do. I've went to their pantries. They have more than enough to sustain everything that somebody may need. So they're going to be fine. And I honestly think that they can hold out way longer than the companies believe that they can. And we're going to hold out until we win this for everybody.
One day longer, one day stronger. Jesse Kelly, mm-hmm. I appreciate you taking time for us. I hope you'll come back and share more as this continues.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Make sure you check out Jesse's podcast, Unity Gains. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that, and maybe send some feedback. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break, right back with your thoughts. Stick around to listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I don't think enough has been made of Trump going to Michigan. I just don't. Holding that sham of a rally, trying to, you know, it was really a fraud. I mean, for someone now found guilty of fraud, he held a fraudulent auto worker rally at a non-union facility where the owner of this non-union facility is holding his child who's holding a UAW sign. I mean, it's fraudulent. It just is what it is. I know it's political theater. I know that they're trying to, you know, it's politics, and, you know, lying, I guess, is part of the scheme. But I don't think enough has been made of the fact that Trump's record is really bad. I mean, his record on labor issues are horrible. This was a guy who gave the Chamber of Commerce everything they wanted for Christmas. You know, when you were a kid, did you get everything you wanted on your list? If your parents said, put down your top 10 toys, anything you want for Christmas, anything you can imagine, a pony, a puppy, all of it, a Lamborghini, Bo Derek or Farrah Fawcett, whatever. When you were a kid, did you ever get everything on your list? No, you may have gotten one thing, maybe two if you were lucky. The Chamber of Commerce, they put out their wet dream list and they got all of them. And it's one of those things that everything that corporate America could have wanted, they got out of Trump. And the pendulum swung just a bit further on the side of the employer class. We seem to forget that during his tenure, the No Rights at Work agenda got that much worse for working people. A Supreme Court that decided we're a right-to-work country for public sector workers, which really just means we're gutting the union's ability to protect and to defend and to advocate for working people. Because that's what right-to-work is all about. It's about giving away laborers their services, their protection, their work, their attorney fees, all of the things that go into representing people, giving away their representation for free. Because it's a right to freeload. But he went so much further than that. Ending the joint employer rule, giving management the ability to change, contract rules unilaterally, during the process of bargaining. There was so much that happened. One of the things that, I go back and I think about, because I had been a union steward for a number of years. And look, when you're a union steward, you're advocating on behalf of someone else. You're basically their mouthpiece, because the employer doesn't want to deal with each individual worker. They're going to deal with the one person who represents the grievance, and you're going to argue over theirs. And I had gotten into a number of very heated arguments with terminal managers over the years. So much so that, I've said things that I later wish I hadn't. I don't regret it. I wish I maybe had been a little more articulate. Let's put it that way. But after all, being a truck driver, there's certain language the FCC would be very unhappy with if I were to use here. But I, in the past, have used some colorful language in representing people. And that was perfectly fine because in those days, a union representative and the company representative were on equal footing in those meetings. Because your job was to deal with this problem. And that worked. So if something colorful popped out, well, that happened. And you moved on because they did it too. Well, one of the things that happened during the Trump years, and again, this is something that the Chamber of Commerce wanted. They wanted to quash that equality in those rooms. They wanted to make sure you still knew who was boss. And they allowed people to be fired or disciplined for using offensive language or profane language, whatever that means, because oh golly gosh darn could be offensive to some. And understand, it's protected NLRA activity, or it was, because understand what the Trump folks, what the Republicans want is working people to know their place. And I go back to that CEO Tim Gurney, who was very clear. He was very articulate in his statement that he wanted higher unemployment, he needed pain and suffering in the economy so that workers would know their place, that they wouldn't think that they're special and that the employer class needed them. He wanted people to know that those workers better know they need the boss and they better darn well be grateful. This is where Republicans have been. So anything you can do to quash people's ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, or profits, let's say that way. Because better wages for workers means lower profits for the shareholders, for the bosses, for the CEO. That's the reality. And they know this. And the reason they don't want union workers is because, well, it cuts into the bottom line. You got to follow pesky rules. You've got to, have safe working conditions. You got to pay minimum wage. You can't cheat people out of wages because the union's going to be there to fight for it. I said this before. I've been working my entire life, over 30 years as in the trucking industry. I've never been cheated out of a dime. They've tried a couple of times, but I filed a grievance and gotten my money. I can't say that about every working person. And in the Trump era, you know, since I brought up wage theft, the person he put in charge of the wage theft division of at the Department of Labor, actually someone who was committing wage theft. Yeah, that, nothing more Trumpian than that. So for me, we're kind of in a moment. Do we go back to the Chamber of Commerce want and need? Or do we continue on what Biden's been doing and his NLRB, which is restoring some rights for workers to be able to get better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, a voice, a say? I don't think it's that tough of a choice. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, we talk about all the time how unions fight to make wages, hours, conditions better, life better. As I've said a million times, union job, better life. Learned that as a small child growing up in the projects. And like I said, yes, unions fight for better wages, hours, conditions, but also they do so much more in the community, so much more for workers and their families. And one of those things, my union, the Teamsters Union, they have a scholarship fund, and they're my local does them. There are a bunch of this stuff to help people get better opportunities. And that's why I've asked Jim Hoffa to come talk with us, former Teamster president. He is now, this is amazing to me. They're giving out, I think it was $1.2 million in scholarship money over the past, you know, several years. You're looking at something like $6.4 million in the James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. That's why I've asked former President Jim Hoffa to come talk with us. Jim, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, good to be here. And good to talk about something I really believe in, the James R. Hoffa Scholarship Fund. Like you said, what's the biggest issue people are talking about? You know, a scholarship fund, we're talking about going to college, the cost of going to college, that people want to go to college, they can't afford it. And we're making it better for Teamsters' sons and daughters because we have a scholarship fund that's been in existence for 23 years. We've given out millions of dollars to thousands and thousands of Teamster kids. And this year, we're awarding $1.2 million, 93 $10,000 scholarships, 32 $1,000 scholarships, what are called bootstraps. And these are going to help kids go to school, go to college, and most of all, also vocational training. So if they want to go to truck driving school, they want to be a nurse, they want to be an aviation mechanic, we're going to make that possible. So, I mean, we're just not making it just for college. We're making it for everybody. I think that's important.
Yeah.
So people can get out, and we want everybody to have the opportunity. You know, the Teamsters are airline pilots and zookeepers. I mean, we cover everything, and we want everybody to have the opportunity. And we have had thousands of applications, and we have an organization that goes through and takes the people that are have, you know, the best grades and stuff like that, that are going to succeed either in whether they're vocational or their college scholarship. So, and we've had a great alumni, you know, when we used to have all of our dinners and everything else, we would have these kids come that won. And it's amazing the stories they would tell about how I wouldn't be able to go to college. And one is a microbiologist. She's a brilliant woman in Seattle, Washington, how she would tell the story about how what the Teamsters made it so she could go to college. Another kid is in Canada. He's going to become a labor lawyer, a labor union lawyer up in Canada because he went to law school and got the money from the Teamster Scholarship Fund. We've got another guy that actually goes to he's a congressman, Brendan Bayer from Pennsylvania. Can you believe that? I don't know if you know him or not.
Yeah.
He has a scholarship, and he will come and testify and say, boy, without that, I couldn't have made it. So, you know, we've got a great alumni group, and it's important for us. You know, in my family, my dad had to drop out of school in the eighth grade. His dad died at a very young age. And the whole family back then, the whole family had to go to work. Everybody had to make money, take in washing, whatever you can do. So the whole family had to stop going to school at the eighth grade to make money for they could survive. And so I think that's where we get the idea of how important scholarships are. My sister and I are the first people in our family, either side of our family, to go to college. So, you know, we believe in it, and I think everybody believes that, you know, we want to do better than our fathers. We want to have a good career. We want to have a good life, and we deserve it here in America.
No, absolutely. And this is, you know, I hear this story over and over again. You know, I'm working hard. I'm doing the truck driving job or the zookeeper job so that my kids will have better opportunities. And this is just another one of those things that our union does to help us get an opportunity at a better life. And I'm thrilled by it. And I hope people will check out the website, jrhmsf.org. We'll get links out on social media. Stands for James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. Like I said, we'll get this out on social media. But this year, a big year. $1.2 million you guys are giving out to recipients. How is this funded?
We basically go out and talk to local unions. They help us. We have investments. We take the money. It's hard to put it together. I called thousands of people for, you want to make sure that they contribute. And we were very, very fortunate to have a lot of locals help us out, make contributions. It's really a work of art for all of us to work. And a lot of the locals will say, I want to give because I got 5 scholarships last year, or I got 2 scholarships, or the year before that, I got a scholarship. Because the locals are notified if somebody in their local gets the scholarship. So they realize there's something in it for them to make it better for their members. So they're enthusiastic about doing it. And we had a tremendous response here. So that's how we fund it. We have them come kick in, and we also invest our money and make sure it gets, you know, hopefully we do okay in the stock market or whatever we're doing, and to get enough money to put together this $1.2 million. We've been doing this for 23 years, and we intend to do it for a long time. So I want you to know we're in business, and we're going to keep it up and keep helping those kids.
Good on you and the work that you do on this, because it's so important. And I know in retirement, this is your baby right now. This is your pet project. This is your passion. But you got to be doing something else as well.
Well, right? I'm working on. I'm part of the institute, the Roosevelt Institute at Hyde Park. I'm on the board of directors there, and we do a lot up there with regard to education. I'm putting out programs, putting out kind of a think tank, and meeting with people. This weekend, we honor Nancy Pelosi. In Hyde Park with one of the awards, and we talked about the issues facing America. I mean, we're getting that message out. And it's a great think tank, and I'm also involved in charities here in Michigan. So I keep busy right now, and I'm looking forward to it, but I keep in contact with all my friends in the union, and that's really one of my second family.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be looking around and seeing, you know, all of the excitement, all of the militancy, all of the activity going on, and you got to be looking on this. It's some pride that you helped build some of this.
Absolutely. It's a great time for labor. Labor's excited right now, you know, whether it's the Teamsters with UPS, whether it's the auto workers right now and the battle that they have right now, the Screen Actors Guild. I understand the culinary is going to go out in Las Vegas. It's a time of militancy right now. And now, why is that happening? I've been thinking about that. Just think about what happened over the last 3-4 years. It's been unusual. It hasn't been regular times. We had the COVID. Remember that knocked us out for a year. But you know what? Working people had to go to work every day. They had to go to work every day. While other people, they said, oh, stay at home, shelter at home, all that stuff. Our people went to work. Our UPS drivers went to work. The auto workers went to work. You know, the bartenders had to go to work. And those are the people out there that are struggling right now. And then what happened? You had almost 8% inflation that came on, you know, right in 2021, 22. And people felt that in their pocket right now. So, you know, gas is high, groceries are high. Everybody's going backwards. And, you know, that belonged to a union. You get a raise, but it's never enough. It's never enough to get better. We want to get better, not stay where we're at. So that's the militancy that's going on right now. And you've got unique issues today. I mean, you really got issues that, you know, there are issues for the time right now. I think one of the issues right now with auto workers is this whole idea of electric cars. You know, they say they can build them with 1/3 less workers. What's going to happen to all the UAW members? They're going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
So I think that they've got to find some way to negotiate with the big three, that whether they're going to be battery plants or whether there's going to be something that goes on, that they keep their membership up and these people still have the benefit of belonging to a strong union. And it's the same thing that's going on, you know, with regard to the Screen Actors Guild and the writers right now. The biggest issue there, you know, is artificial intelligence. You know, I had an example this weekend of how you can basically duplicate something. And I saw what they came up with. I got news where it was unbelievable that it was done by a machine.
Yeah.
Somebody demonstrated that to me because I had never seen it before. So it's a great danger to all of us. And of course, the culinary out in Las Vegas you know, there's a lot of money out there, and they're got a struggle out there. We're very, very close to that union, and we give them all the support they can.
No, they're good folks. I got to get your thoughts on President Biden walking a picket line. Historic, first time a sitting president has ever walked a picket line. And I know Barack Obama said he was going to put on his comfortable shoes and he was going to get out there. Didn't mention Wisconsin, didn't show up. But President Biden walked the picket line. And, you know, it's one thing to talk the talk. It's a whole nother thing to walk the walk. And he did.
No, he did. You know, I don't know where people talk about that he's not doing a good job. And what he's been the best labor president we've ever had. We haven't had anybody him like since FDR. He's been tremendous for us. I mean, he did the Recovery Act. He's done so many things to bring jobs to America. He's created 13 million jobs. Anybody wants to get a job, everybody knows you can get one right now. There's signs everywhere. You can just pick the job you want, and there are good jobs. So I don't know where people are saying that he's not doing a good job. And the fact that he came here, I think, really made history. And I think it shows where his heart is, because he's that kind of a guy. I've known him for a number of years. He believes in the other people. You know, you go back to Clinton, you go back to Obama. They were good presidents, but I don't think they really bought into the fact of the labor movement. And Joe does believe in that.
So I got on the other side, the flip side of this, you know, because on Tuesday you had Biden walking the picket line. On Wednesday, Donald Trump went to a non-union facility, surrounded himself with actors and paid grifters to hold up signs and pretend to be union members and workers. Any thoughts on the juxtaposition between the two of them?
Oh, I don't think he did himself any good here. I mean, the same crazy show up for him. If he shows up in Macomb County, which is the east side of Detroit, he could always draw several thousand people, and they weren't union people going there. They were just basically the people that vote for Trump. They're Trumpsters, you know. They show up anywhere, and they've got their drums and their, you know, the three-cornered hats and flags and everything else, but they're the same people that show up. I don't think he made himself any friends here. He certainly didn't get any support from he didn't incur anything with regard to the labor vote that's going to come out of Michigan for Biden.
At least I hope so. That's what my friends in Michigan keep telling me, that don't be afraid. But I'm always concerned.
Well, I'm always concerned too. You got to run scared all the time. You know that.
this is the truth. I want to go back real quick to the scholarship fund, because I want to make sure that we hammer this home, because I think it's so important for our Teamster members and my Teamster brothers and sisters to know that this is out there. This is available, the James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. Real simple. It's jrhmsf.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at this. This really is your passion, isn't it?
Yeah, let me just say the one more thing. We mail out all the applications and all the material to every local, and they're the ones that distribute that and talk to their members about making sure people sign up. So they're the ones that do that, and I think that's how this all gets happening. We had over 1,000 applications. We were very, very thrilled with that people are responding, because there's a tremendous need right now for people to go to school. They need help right now, and that's what we're doing right now. So it's been a big success, but we go to the locals, and the locals help us, you know, get the word out. You go to your local, they know about it, they've got the applications. You can get it online, like you just said. You can go online on James R. Hoffa Scholarship Memorial Scholarship Fund, James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. So if you do that, you can get the application. But the local unions are also getting the material. They have cardboard cutouts that they put out in the local so people can say, sign up right now for this. It's important that we do this, and we get the support of our members. And it's important that we continue the support from the local unions, too.
And I think it's also important, the legacy of your father. You know, personal story, my grandfather was a huge fan of your father, because, you know, when he started working back in the late 20s, he was making 17 cents an hour shoveling coal off the back of a coal truck for 16 hours a day. And by the time he was able to retire, after spending a number of most of his working life as a working Teamster, he retired with dignity, was able to live out his life in his home with dignity and respect. And he gave credit to your father and to the union for being able to give him that opportunity. And I think there are so many stories like that still out there, and so many people like me who remember them. That's why I think it's important to keep that legacy alive.
Well, I was the same thing. You know, I was at the... I was at a meeting in Florida, and one of the members said, when I came to work, here at UPS. It was a UPS driver. He had a great career. He was getting ready to retire. He says, I was making $8 an hour. When I retired, I'm making 42. He says, that's pretty damn good. And I said, he said, that's the way it is. That's what the Teamsters Union delivers.
That's it. President Hoffa, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Great work. Keep this up. I'd love to have you come back and talk to us again as this continues to grow.
Rick, keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, Jim Hoffa. He is the chief cook and bottle washer there at the James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. Make sure you check out their website, jrhmsf.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at it. And hey, another reason to be joining the Teamsters Union. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. Did you enjoy a cup of coffee to start your day this morning? Well, on this day in labor history, the year was 2007. That was the day that Starbucks agreed to post information about union rights on an employee bulletin board at its store in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The International Workers of the World, or Wobblies, were attempting to organize the baristas at that store. The IWW accused Starbucks of interfering with the right to form a union. Starbucks management consistently points to better than average benefits provided for their employees as a reason against unionization. Starbucks management decided to settle the Grand Rapids dispute by letting the union information to go up before the case went through the full labor review board process. This was just one incidence of the IWW's attempt to organize Starbucks workers. The IWW began its outreach efforts at Starbucks in 2004. One of the most pressing issues facing the baristas was scheduling. Like many in the service industry, they are subject to so-called flexible scheduling. Computer software programs create scheduling aimed at reducing labor costs. The result of these programs is often inconsistent and unpredictable hours. This scheduling makes it difficult for workers to establish a budget or plan for childcare. In 2014, the New York Times published a story on this kind of scheduling, featuring the difficulties faced by one Starbucks worker. In a study published also in 2014, they showed that Starbucks stores had 14% less employees on average in 2011 through 13 than they did in 2005 through 2007. Starbucks is not alone in using computer scheduling. Efforts to cut labor costs continue to have devastating impact on the day-to-day lives of workers in the service economy. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So I don't know if you saw the story at the Washington Post last week. There are 11 women who are responsible for 60% of all of the book ban requests in this country. Let me say that again. Evidently, there are 11 women, 11, just 11, responsible for over 60% of all of the book ban requests. Think about that. My first thought was someone needs a job. And then I'm like, oh, wait, that is their job. Because, you know, my mind started going to this place where someone's footing the bill for all this. And there is a well-coordinated effort to attack libraries and just attack public education as a whole. And it's all the same people. It's all the regulars, the usual suspects. And I bring this up not because I want to reiterate the fact that the big money wants to control what our kids see and read, and that the big money wants to ensure that, their agenda is what is put in front of us. It's the pushback that I want to talk about. Because I remember as a kid, I went to a school where, for all the people who say, we should have prayer in school. I went to a school where prayer in school was the thing. You got up every day, you said the Pledge of Allegiance, you said a prayer every morning. And do you know what it became? The pledge didn't have any real meaning. People said it because, okay, we have to. It wasn't a sense of, you know, patriotism. It was, oh, one more thing to start our day. And the prayer meant nothing because, well, again, it's, oh, we got to do this again. So I've always been, I don't care about prayer in school. Just which prayer are you going to say? That's always been my argument. It's when you make something a protest that you get people who are then, we have to do this. And it's a defiance thing. When you tell people they can't, when you tell them they have to, okay, begrudgingly they'll go through it. But once you tell them they can't, well, that becomes something all entirely different. For instance, a lot of these books that are being banned, nobody even knew were on the shelves. Literally no one. The second you paid attention to it, now everybody, it's like when I was younger, not the kid younger, but younger in my 20s, a band called Two Live Crew had an album out for a couple of years. Nobody knew anything about it. It was basically nothing. Then you got a senator's wife who said, well, we should put warning labels on albums. And now double platinum gold, the best-selling album of the year. And it was garbage. But someone said, hey, you can't have this because it says bad stuff. Now everyone had to go get it. So what do you think is happening, Moms for Liberty? What do you think your little darlings are doing right now while you're saying, no, you can't read these books? That's right. Evidently, across the country, there are students forming banned book clubs. These kids are forming anti-censorship groups. These kids are going, hey, you don't want us to see it? We're kids, man. Defiance is our birthright. And I got to tell you, there's part of me that goes, good. Serves them right, I guess, on a certain level. But more importantly, it shows me that my faith in humanity. You can say 1,000 times, we want you to do this. We want you to read more books. We want you to do that. And never going to happen. The second you say, no, you can't. Well, bang. Now it's almost a must. Now, do I want kids in elementary school reading pornography as I've been asked? The answer is no. No parent wants that. No sane, rational parent wants that. But not everything is pornography. Not everything is offensive to everyone. And in fact, the idea of a well-rounded education is that you're exposed to a lot of things. And look, I'm a little more conservative in what I want my children to see, maybe more than the next person. And that's a choice for parents, educators, students, not 11 women who have nothing better to do. That seems to be the point for me. So the fact that you got these 11 women, quite amazing to me. But there you go. Let's quick. We can get a call in real quick. All right, let's do that. Let's quick take a phone call and see who we got here on line one. Hey, what's on your mind? Go ahead.
Rick, good evening. It's Brian from Illinois.
Hey, Brian.
And I just wanted to remind you of the old, now I'm drawing a blank and I'm so sorry, the old show with Ed O'Neill and Katie Sagal.
Oh yeah, Married with Children.
That was nothing until some woman in Michigan got a hold of it. They were going to pull it off the air.
Yeah, I forgot all about
and
that.
And she made such a big deal that everybody said, "Oh, what's this?" And the rest is history.
Yeah.
So I'll leave you be, but have a good night. But I just wanted to remind everybody.
No, that's perfect. That's a perfect way to end it. Thank you so much. No, because that's exactly the point. the second you pointed out and said, no, you kids can't see this, it's the moment that they had to see. They have to see it. Because I remember being a kid. I know it was a long time ago. I know when my mother said, don't touch that. Had to touch it. I know that when she said, don't do that, had to do it. So there's gonna be a blowback to these book banning, education burning Moms for Liberty groups, and it's gonna be their kids doing it, and that's the solace that I take as they're attempting to destroy public education. But it's incumbent on us, you and me, and the rest of us who believe that education should be there for everyone. It should be open to the public, and it should be universal across the board, not just for ones who are fortunate enough to be able to afford private education or connected enough to get into special, kind of charter scenarios, but a good quality, efficient education for every student, regardless of your zip code, regardless of where your station on the socioeconomic ladder finds you. And yes, being able to read books. That's where we're going to end tonight. I appreciate you taking time for us. You miss any portion of the program, download the podcast. Something I said got under your skin, on your nerves, or made you think, I want to hear about it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, especially angry emails. Angry goes to the top of the list. I answer those generally first. So by all means, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.